Welcome to another episode of Coffee,
your podcast with a little bit of Brazilian coffee. Café.
Who follows our podcast for a while knows already that we produce different content in Portuguese and in English. They are not translation of each other because it doesn't make sense to say the same things to audience with different interests. For example, it doesn't make sense to explain to Brazilian people that Santos is a city in the countryside of São Paulo state where the biggest exportation port is located. However, lots of people in the international community believe that Santos coffee is a farm name or a region, or even worse, they believe that Santos city produces coffee. For this reason, I decided to produce episodes in English as well. And after a break, we are back with a very special guest, James Hoffman. I was really lucky to meet him in 2018 during Let's Talk Coffee event organized by Sustainable Harvest, and this edition was in Cartagena, Colombia. I was thrilled to listen to his lecture about a new social contract. I will leave the link in our website, so after this episode, go and check it out because it's really worth listening. During our quick conversation between lectures, we talked about, of course, Brazilian coffee, baristas competitions, and important thoughts to rethink how we can overcome together challenges for this market. This short section that you're listening right now, I call this Espresso Moment, and it's dedicated for a brief moment between me, Kelly Stein, your host, and you, my beloved listener. In this section, I read sometimes some messages that I receive from the international community, and I share news from Coffee. One of the great news is that Coffee, this podcast, now has a sister company called Coffee Trips, where we will share some coffee experiences in urban and rural areas with great content. If you want to follow us, go to Instagram and search for Coffee Trips, CoffeeTrips. In this first phase, we will prepare experiences on demand, according to the group profile and expectations, only in Brazil, but we will go international in the second semester of 2020. If you are interested to learn more about how you can reach Brazilian origins, especially during harvest, guys, you can also send me an email to contato, C-O-N-T-A-T-O, at Coffee Trips, coffeetrips.com.br. And last but not least message, I would like to remember you, if you're arriving right now, if this is the first episode of Coffee that you're listening, our podcast has a different business model, which is based on independent journalism. It means that we do not have sponsors or ads to support our content. We rely on listeners' financial support. If you like our content and want to help us to be on air, please go to our website at Contribua, C-O-N-T-R-I-B-U-A, and make your donation using PayPal. We are very, very thankful for your audience, and we will be delighted to have your support. Remember that any amount of money will help us greatly. Remember, Coffee is free for everyone and sponsored by you, listeners. Yes, after all these messages, we are ready to start our talk with James Hoffman. Grab a cup of coffee and enjoy it. Coffee thinkers all over the world. First of all, I apologize for my voice. It doesn't sound like this usually, but we are in Cartagena covering the Let's Talk Coffee. I'm in front of James Hoffman. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for having me and giving some little time for this talk.
Of course.
I would like to start talking a little bit about, so can you just summarize your experience, your book writer, barista
sure.
champion?
I guess I've worked in coffee since 2003, 10 years ago. I co-founded a coffee roasting company called Square Mile Coffee Roasters. The year before that, I was the World Barista Champion. I do a few other things in the coffee world as well now. I also wrote a book, came out in 2000 and 2014 called The World Atlas of Coffee that has been a great success, which has been amazing for me.
I love the book. I have it.
Yeah, thank you. And we have there's a new edition coming out now this year, which is fun. It's scary all over again, though. I do a few other bits and pieces now. I do a little bit of consulting work. I do a little bit of advisory work. And I am still, thankfully, very much in love with coffee 15 years later. So, yeah, that's pretty much me.
It's interesting your perspective when you compare to the baristas, Brazilian baristas, because you have the whole world to explore coffee-wise, mm-hmm. while we have this limitation. So, for sure, the view that we have of our origins, our regions, is completely different from yours.
Okay.
So, can you just give your perspective of the Brazilian coffee?
I think this year, for me personally, has been a year where I've never enjoyed coffees from Brazil more. I feel like it's a part of the world that has a certain reputation for the style of coffees produced, right? Like, people generally see them as being lower acidity, like slightly less complex, kind of sweeter, rounder, heavier bodied things. And I think this year, it seems more than ever a producing part of the world that is going through change and evolution. And some of the coffees that I have tasted this year have been so incredibly delicious and interesting and unusual and complex. So I think a lot of people probably have quite a fixed view of Brazil, but I feel like that's starting to break a little bit now. I think people's minds are being opened up to more, and I think people get very excited about seeing these kind of changes come through.
How these coffee are reaching you? Importers, or you're going to international shows and participate in cuppings?
I don't source. I'm not the buyer for my company. But by and large, the buyer for Square Mile, she spends a little bit of time in Brazil, and then obviously we'll work with either an exporter there, and in some cases we may work with a local importer if they have something particularly interesting. So for us, we're trying to sort of taste as much as we can, see as much as we can to sort of understand what's going on.
And what is the profile of the Brazilian coffee that you tasted and it was really wow this year?
This year, I think that, there was just a lot more kind of fruit and floral characteristics in the coffees we tasted this year, that they had, you know, a little bit less of those kind of traditional kind of nuttier qualities that a lot of people associate with Brazil. And I guess a kind of lightness to them, not in terms of like a light roasted flavor, but just like a delicate profile that is kind of unusual and was very enjoyable to me.
And do you think this is processing, a result of processing methods or fermentation? What changed in your opinion?
That's a good question. I think there's certainly some more experimentation going on right now in those two sort of particular areas. And yes, I think there were definitely some processing experiments that we tasted and enjoyed a lot. Fermentation, I think, continues to be... I feel like we're just scratching the surface now, right? Like, fermentation experiments have gone on for a long time, but I think the way in which we're approaching those experiments is changing as an industry, right? Like, we're a little bit more open-minded. You're seeing sort of ideas exchange quickly through things like the internet, right? Which means that,
yes,
you know,
yes.
As the internet truly reaches everyone now, like, if you are interested in what people are doing processing-wise in other countries, that information is more and more and more available. And often coffee roasters are so desperate to tell every single piece of information about a coffee that they've bought that there's actually a lot of information on processing experiments on different coffee roasters' websites these days. So, yeah, I think primarily, I think these were... fermentation-derived kind of interesting lots, but I'd have to look it up to be 100% sure. We need Solderol. It's all gone now, but it's too popular. It was one that it sold really well for us, like really quickly, and everyone was very happy, but also a little bit sad when something great goes.
Yeah.
It's the weird sort
like
of,
when you finish reading a book, right?
Right. You know what I mean? You're like, that was, I'm not ready to let go yet. You know, that feeling.
Fermentation is really in vogue right now in Brazil, but there are lots of misconceptions and not very accurate information.
Sure.
So producers maybe can be victims of investing a lot of money. What is your advice for these people who want to improve quality through fermentation or processing method, but they are not very aware?
I think it would always be... small experiments, right? Like the opportunity, the risk is simply too high. And the nice thing about fermentation experiments is they work for a single kilo. You know what I mean?
Like, yes. So
running, you know, taking 1 kilo 5 times and running 5 experiments doesn't put the rest of your crop at risk, really. 5 kilos is an okay risk amount.
Yes.
But I think you can learn a lot at that point to potentially apply the next year. But I think there's no real shortcut to this. You know, I certainly remember talking to Aida Batier in El Salvador, and she would basically do the same thing. Like every year, she runs lots and lots and lots of very small experiments like this to decide which ones are worth scaling up to being a little bit bigger. They work, they get sort of scaled up again. But it is a slow process, and fermentation is not, I don't think, going to be like an overnight success thing. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, yeah, I would go small and then really try and understand what it is you're trying to achieve with changing the way you ferment coffee, right? A great deal about processing should be what it was, you know, all about at the start, which is preserving quality, right? It's not about necessarily creation or creating flavor at that point, but, you know, you should have created good flavor through growing good fruit, and then it's about preserving that. So anything that increases risk, I'm always slightly nervous about.
It's interesting what you mentioned, because the producer needs to, first of all, know what they are producing. Mm-hmm. So cupping skills is necessary to analyze the results of these experiments, right? Do you believe that fermentation will stay, or is just a trend of vogue?
I think that we're definitely seeing enough success that aspects of this will stay. You know, there's been learning around this sort of stuff that I think just becomes part of the wider coffee knowledge. I hope the trend for experimentation doesn't die away, because it's how we keep learning and evolving. I worry that coffee does a thing where we really hold certain things up very high for a minute, right? It might be a particular variety at one moment. Like, we might say geisha is the greatest thing ever for a minute, and then...
Like geisha, everybody's talking about geisha.
Right. So, you know, but it doesn't mean that's the right variety for most people's land, right? But
Yeah.
we do this thing where we promote one thing very hard, and then we kind of move on. We promote another thing very hard and we move on. And you know, trying to grow coffee to a trend, I think, is probably a bad idea. But I think taking away some of what's interesting about a trend and building that into to the coffee you farm is probably a little bit more realistic. You know what I mean?
Yes,
don't chase the trend too hard. Just understand what's happening. Look for the concrete, real information in this. And
see,
yeah,
if it makes sense for your reality, right?
Right. But the last thing coffee needs is for everyone to be producing coffee that tastes the same. You know?
Like, yes.
So... dictionary type definition of fermentation: an anaerobic cellular process of breaking down a substance by bacteria, yeast, fungi, or other microorganisms into simple organic substances and energy. So often that's creating heat. So essentially, we just have microbes that are eating something and generating energy. Yeast break down larger compounds like sugars into smaller ones like alcohol. And that's why kombucha has a little bit of alcohol in it, whether they say it does or not, because those sugars have been devoured kind of like Pac-Man style into alcohols. Since yeasts and other microbes are present in the air, spontaneous fermentation can always happen at any time if the environment is suitable. So if I have my banana smoothie sit on my counter for a couple of days, spontaneous fermentation is going to start happening because heat, time, proper microbes available, etc., right? Fermentation can also be completely intentional, and we create these recipes and use specific yeast strains to generate a specific result, right? And the idea is that there are all these different yeasts in competition to thrive. And so what we do is we select a yeast that overpopulates the yeast we don't want, that they win out the battle for food and they take over. So we can select yeasts. And there are many factors that affect fermentation. Temperature, like I mentioned, warm things, that's why we have refrigerators, right? Time, if I don't leave something out for long enough, it's not going to ferment necessarily, or fermentation won't run away from me. Amount of food, so how much sugar is involved, how much sugar is in that. My banana smoothie has a lot of sugar, so that will ferment more quickly than something else that's not a banana smoothie. The microorganism strain. Certain strains act differently. The amount of the starting strain. So it's almost, of course, we think about it as dose, time, temperature, you know, variety, very brewing type variables.
Have you ever been in Brazil?
I've never been in Brazil.
Oh, no.
I know.
Are you serious?
I know.
There are lots of cool stuff going on, especially there's a new generation of baristas
mm-hmm.
who's very energetic. They are willing to study and do better. But there is like rumors among these professionals that if you want to win an international championship as a barista, you don't have lots of chances with the Brazilian coffee. What is your opinion about that? Do you think there is like a paradox, or do you think there is a problem among international judges who will analyze the performance of this barista?
I don't think that's necessarily true. I think that, you know, while times have changed a lot from when I was competing, when I competed, I used a single estate coffee from Costa Rica that was not particularly interesting or unusual. It was just nice. And I used coffee from Kenya in my cappuccinos, right? Which was the last thing that people would expect you to do, right? Like a high acidity coffee plus milk. That sounds terrible, but it was kind of fun. But the point being, I wanted to use coffees that no one would expect to be the kind of things that you would serve at the World Barista Championship. Right. And so the coffee needs to be good, sure, but that's not a problem in any producing country. Any producing country can produce great coffee. It then has to be a coffee that the person serving it actually feels genuinely excited to serve, right? Like why this? You know, there's hundreds, if not thousands, of different potential coffees you could pick to bring to a barista competition. So out of all of those choices, why did you bring this one? Why this? What is it about this that you want to share with the judges, that you want to share with other people? What's the story? What's the meaning of this? And I think if you can get the judges to form an emotional connection to your coffee, that's kind of half the battle. You know what I mean? Like that's a really big part of it. The kind of wild and crazy coffees, sure, in some ways they score well because they're very distinct, but I don't think it excludes the coffees that don't do that crazy geisha style thing. And I think right now we've sort of had peak geisha, and I think the pendulum of fashion is going to swing back again away from them. So yeah, I think, you know, it just has to be something you believe in, right? If you're serving a coffee because you think it's cool or because you think it will get you to win, that's not really an emotional connection that I can form with that product as a judge. You know what I mean? Like that's, I don't care, you know?
In your opinion, so the barista must know the rules perfectly.
Is sure.
And also find a way to connect emotionally to the judges.
So, yeah, know the rules. Barista competition is a game, right? It's a game based on making coffee, but it's a game first and foremost. So knowing the rules completely will help you win the game, will help you score as many points as possible. And it's okay to be annoyed that it doesn't represent what it's like to be a barista in a cafe. That's not what it's trying to do. It's just a game based on making coffee. So yeah, that's a big part of it. And then judges don't like it when I say this, but it's important to remember that humans are easy to manipulate, right? Like how, you know, how...
So teach us.
Well, no, like a...
you're not willing to compete again, right?
No, I'm not going to compete
okay,
again.
Okay, so you're saying that the raw true.
So the way I see it is that, you know, we see endless data out there in the world about how many different ways that we can manipulate people's sense of taste, right? Like you see stuff around color of cup or music playing in the background will affect people's sense of taste. We are not objective animals, right? Like we are very subjective. And so if you can change someone's emotional state, then that has a really positive impact on how they're going to score you. Essentially, you need them to like you and like what you're doing.
It's really complicated because if you don't know the background of those judges, international ones from different backgrounds, there is not a recipe. It's like filling.
No, there's not a recipe, but there's lots of little things that, you know, are worth thinking about. Like, okay, as a really basic example.
Please.
Sure. Okay, so if I tell you this coffee smells like chocolate, right? Sure, whatever. If I tell you, the problem with chocolate at that point is it's abstract. Right? It's not real.
Yeah.
If I tell you this coffee smells like a tray of brownies fresh out of the oven, have you smelled that? You know, have you ever pulled it, like it's
yes.
that smell?
Uh-huh.
You know that smell? That's a much more evocative and real smell. Like I can be like, oh, that smell, that's a good smell. I feel good about that smell, right? Like if you can bring a positive association from someone's memory to a descriptor, that's really helpful, right? Like don't tell me something tastes of lemons. you know, give me a really positive lemon context. Does that make sense?
Yes,
right,
yes.
Right, right,
yes.
So you want me to have good feelings about this before I've even tasted it. Does that make sense?
Yes, yes.
And there's lots of other stuff you can, you know, I got really into all sorts of weird stuff back before I was competing.
But did you have help from a coach or a writer to do your speech or meditation? Because I can see that it's a very sensitive time, that 15 minutes, and yeah, people can get really shaky and nervous and forget the speech.
Right.
Did you get any special preparation?
No, I was lucky that, you know, my job before this was basically doing presentations and kind of coffee training presentations to groups of 10 to 20 people at a time, several times a week, right? So stage fright was less of an issue for me. I still got nervous and I used to shake a lot. And then I worked out that I was shaking a lot because I'd had like 15 espressos in the training area, right? Before I went on stage, because I was like tasting and making sure everything tasted good. Mm-hmm. So when I competed in the Worlds in Tokyo, I had had half an espresso all day, right? Because I just knew if I drank a lot of coffee, it would just amplify my shakiness. So the team tasted. Everyone agreed it was tasting good. Then I had a little sip, make sure my descriptors were still accurate. And I strongly recommend that to any competitor. Like, have a team that when it comes to competition time,
just
knows
shake
your coffee.
For you.
Right. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't matter if they feel weird. They don't have to go on stage afterwards, right? So you need to have tasted your coffee so you're comfortable with your descriptors, but you don't need to drink half a dozen espressos before you go on stage, right? Like that's just setting yourself up for a more difficult time. And it's already such a difficult and weird experience being on stage that's hard to practice for. So that's a
great tip. The Brazilian champions, they are studying and practicing. Is there the last advice to give them?
I think, I can't say this is universally true, but it was interesting just talking to Agnieszka downstairs, that going into the finals, we had a very similar approach, which was we'd set goals for ourselves that weren't about winning, right? Like it was to, you know, her goal was to do better than 34th. My goal at the time was to make finals again. Okay. So I made finals in 2006 and I made finals again in 2007. And at that point, I had succeeded, right? And so the pressure was off when the finals happened. And I didn't think I would win. I didn't think I could win. And so I went out and enjoyed myself. And I think the thing I would say is make sure you have a goal for the competition that isn't winning it, because you're not in charge of whether you win or not. You can't control for how hard someone else has practiced. You can't control for how good a job they did on that stage. You know what I mean? Like it's not a tactical game. You can't beat another person. Whereas the competition is really about you and you alone. So if your only goal is I must win, that's kind of a terrible goal because you don't have the power to necessarily achieve that.
True.
You know what I mean?
Yes, yes.
So you end up seeing people very, very nervous and stressed in finals a lot of the time because they only have one goal and that's to win, but all of them have the same goal, so most of them are going to have a bad time. For me, I wanted to get up, I wanted to do something interesting, I wanted to sort of
inspire people.
I wanted to be memorable in a very selfish way, like at a point in my career where I just wanted, you know, I wanted to sort of use the competition as a platform for myself and to, you know, try and advance my career a little bit. But yeah, I think, you know, when I worked with Stephen the year after me and I went to work with Gwilym the year after that, again, there were lots of goals that we set of like, okay, when are we satisfied by what we've done here, right? And it might be delivering a performance or a message or saying something the way that you wanted to, and then you walk away from that competition feeling very satisfied. You'll have enjoyed it, you can learn a ton from it. But you know, if you go just to win, you see people have that experience, don't win, they're very angry, frustrated, resentful, they don't really learn as much as they could, and they don't come back, and that's a shame. So that's my other
good
advice.
Thank you for that. During these days in Let's Talk Coffee, there were lots of speeches and lectures really rich, but yours was one of my favorites.
Thank you for that.
I don't know if it's possible to summarize the whole idea of the new social contract.
Sure. So I would guess, especially coffee, has by and large sort of tried to separate itself from commercial coffee by saying we pay more for coffee and that's so we're okay, right? And I said that, you know what I mean? I felt that for a long time.
Everybody does.
Right. And then I began to think of it a different way. I began to realize that if you look at trade through the lenses of risk and of power, well, actually, even if we pay just a little bit more for good quality, we're not really doing much to share risk with producers who have very high risk in what they do. And we have much lower risk. And ultimately, the power actually still stays with us. We can turn up one year and be like, oh, I like your coffee. I'll pay you a premium next year. I don't like your coffee, I'm going to pay this person a premium. And there's no real, you know, what that increases risk again, and the power all stays with the roaster, the buyer, right? And I think that my feeling was, you know, contracts, traditionally long-term contracts, seem to be a reasonable way to help share risk, but we've had those for a long time, and actually we still have tons of problems. So what if we started from scratch, right? Like, what if we started with a contract that started with the growers and what they want and need, and it brought in voices from others in the supply chain, right? The nonprofits in the area, those who are involved all the way up until the roaster, because we know what the roaster wants, right? Roaster has very simple needs in a contract, but that's all contracts meet, is the needs of the roaster. They True. Don't meet the needs of everyone else. So the question is, could we create a new kind of contract that starts with the needs of a producer? Because I would argue that roasters have a ton of resources, not just money. Right, you could argue that roasters have a ton of what you might call social or cultural capital, right? Like we could, if we wanted to, do a much better job of building the brands of the farms that we buy from. Because what you'll see is that by and large, some of the most successful farms have the most successful brands, and those two things are kind of tied together. You know what I mean? Like Hacienda La Esmeralda, El Injerto,
yes.
Right? Like those are great brands, and they can command a price because the brand is there. You know what I mean? Like they set the price because there's demand, because their brand is strong and it has some consumer level.
How do they build their brand? By themselves or with help from roasters?
Definitely with help from roasters. I mean, you know, I completely tie El Injerto to Stumptown. Like, I feel like they collaboratively worked really hard on building that brand. And it meant that, you know, the consumers would pay more for the coffee, Stumptown would pay more for the coffee. It was really interesting to me from the outside. And the downside is, you know, if roaster created a brand of a coffee farm, then that, you know, that farm could maybe turn around to someone else and sell the coffee elsewhere instead, because now they get a better price or other things like that. So it introduces risk to the roaster, but that's kind of the point. Like, we need some more. I think ultimately, you know, we need some more risk to go to roasters. But even in this case, the risk is very low. What they're spending is cultural capital, social capital, which is not expensive. It's not money. You know what I mean? It's just, it's their brand and that kind of stuff. It's time and effort. But I think there's a lot that roasters could do beyond, you know, what we're doing right now.
What I can see in Brazil is traders are working on these long-term relationships, but they are not written in contract first. And if that producer decides to sell to another exporter, they just pull the plug. This is happening.
For sure. But I would argue that by and large, if a producer breaks a contract, it probably wasn't that good of a deal to start with. You know what I mean?
But they didn't break.
Right.
But they have enough to fulfill this contract with this, I don't know, trader A.
Right.
But they have extra good coffee and they want to trade with trader B. And they got jealous, A, because they helped, they invested money and time and energy to build the qualification of that producer, and all of a sudden they are selling to the concurrence, let's say, like this.
Sure. Why didn't they sell more to the first one?
Good question.
I don't, you know what I mean? Like,
yes.
I don't know.
Good point.
My other real point of the whole talk was that ultimately I shouldn't be the one to come and write these new kind of contracts, right? Because my experience is solely of that of a roaster, right? Or a barista to some extent. But I have such a limited worldview that I wanted to come here to a room full of producers and be like, tell me what this could be. Right, like, tell me what this could and should be. And I think Sustainable Harvest were very interested in that idea as well, and I think are really motivated to try and turn this into something real, right? To take a talk on a stage and actually turn it into a new kind of contract, which is pretty exciting to me. You know, like, I like it when, you know, they're clearly passionate people, motivated in the right way, and I think they really want to make it something and try and approach this in a fresh way. So, like, I don't want this to just be a talk that exists in a vacuum. You know what I mean? Like,
a beautiful idea, and that's
right.
It.
And because I don't care about ideas. Like, they have to, execution is everything. And I think, you know, there's a wall of post-its downstairs that people wrote their ideas for what they would want in this kind of a contract. I'm going to photograph everyone and take them home. I think this hopefully is the beginning of something that will take some time, but will hopefully iterate and evolve into something new.
It's really exciting, the idea, but I get frustrated because I cannot see the next step. Like, what can I do as a Brazilian journalist, or who is listening coming to us, what can they do to make it reality? What are the next steps, the first steps of this nice idea?
Well, I think really it's going to lie with roasters.
Really?
Right, because the way that this actually makes a difference is that people put money behind this, and that's where the money is, right? Like, it's the people who are like, okay, we could buy this way and that's different, and okay, there's some challenges and some scary stuff in there. But yeah, I think, you know, in this initial phase of gestation, I think that's a part of it, which is just roasters have to step up. And we've talked such a long time about we want to do better. Now we have to act. You know what I mean? Like, now we have to...
No, I understand, but if the producer doesn't have a plan, is not organizing their thoughts about their priorities and needs, the roaster can arrive with the money, say, now, and now what?
Right. Well, I mean, and that's why we're trying to collect it and turn it into something here at this event, right?
Like,
And I think having spoken to Dave a little bit more about this, I think they want to take it on to Boston and evolve it some more at the next major conference, right? Like, this is something they want to make a real thing. So, like I said, it's early days. I don't know what will become of it. I, you know, for me, I hope to take some stuff away to maybe change how we're doing stuff straight away. You know, I have a ton of ideas that I think about. If I was a producer, what would I want? But again, I'm
You're
also
not
worried.
A producer,
I'm not
yeah.
a producer, right? So that it's kind of poisoned thought from that perspective. And, you know.
And someone who is listening to us, is there an email or a website just to keep the contacts and, I don't know, think about steps and exchange information until Boston or the next event?
I would probably focus on Sustainable Harvest in the short term. I think they're going to own this and take it forwards.
Thank you very much. Is there anything you'd like to add about Brazilian coffee or this new social contract? Because Brazil is huge.
Right.
So everybody's looking at us. Most of Brazilians, they are not aware how heavy it is. So maybe this social contract, Brazil can start, go ahead. And I don't know.
I think it's, I don't know. Like, at this point, it's been a moment of learning for me and, you know, even though I was the one coming to talk. So, at this point, I'm sort of at the I don't know what now stage. I'm at the hopeful stage, but I'm at the I don't know what now. But, you know, like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, let's hope I get to come
Maybe
to Brazil
Maybe we can
soon.
Start brainstorming. Yeah, you can come for the first time to Brazil.
Yeah.
Know our realities because we have different worlds
for
in
sure.
the same country. And, okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having me.
Coffee, 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 co